Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah. Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thank you for joining us this morning. Thank you for taking time out and letting me just have my say and bring on some guests and let's just have a good time. And I apologize. I was not on live yesterday and the day before. I do try most days to be live, but, you know, things happen. But anyway, in the show later, we're going to talk with dietitian Tara Guidus Collingwood about some, I guess, what I call beach body basics, you know, things that, you know, it may not happen overnight, but maybe some things we can do with our diet to kind of, you know, get us in that shape, because it is that time of year, especially here in Florida. For those of you that are in other places other than Florida, you're welcome to come down and enjoy with us. But if you're not here and you're coming down later, or you're going to just enjoy the beach wherever you are or the pool, you know, just some tips that you might want to use to get started in advance. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and also get some mommy tips with Mother's Day coming up. But before we have Ms. Collingwood on, we are, you know, taking questions, comments. So the number, if you want to join, chit-chat. 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. While we're waiting for Ms. Collingwood, I wanted to talk a little bit about something that I saw on the LinkedIn Daily Rundown that I will share on the G's Power Hour Facebook page. And it talks about most grads don't work in degree field. And it's a story that's by Harriet Sinclair, who's the editor at LinkedIn News. It's based on a new survey, so I'll try to find out more. And it says students considering taking on 4-year commitment and the debt that comes with it often wonder whether it's worth the hefty bill. New surveys may add to that doubt. It says it might find that the majority of graduates over 25 don't work in the field they studied in. A quarter earn less than $30,000 a year, and the 1 in 7 respondents live just above the U.S. poverty line. The areas that were faring particularly poorly after the degree was science, communication, education, and art majors, 40% of whom earn below $45,000 a year. Now, I, being a you know, college graduate, not advanced degrees, but I did get my BA in one of those fields, mentioned communications. I would venture to say that you have to kind of weigh your choices. Because I would venture to say that one of the things that I discovered and tried to pass on to other people that were going into the field of journalism, broadcasting, whatever area that they were coming into, I always said have a backup plan. And the reason being, because you don't want to discourage anybody from going in, but college is a good time also to get a double major, to learn about other areas of expertise. For example, if you're going to communications, that's fine, but maybe you want to be, for example, the science reporter. Maybe you want to get some education in health and be a health reporter. Physical education, you know, we have sports reporters out there. So I would venture to say is if college is for you, because I can't necessarily knock college. You know, for me, it was some of the best years of my life. I learned not just academic lessons, but life lessons. And therefore, I'm not necessarily in that area where I want to say college is a no. I think it's a case-by-case basis. I think there's a lot of things that you have to weigh. You have to weigh finances. You also have to weigh time, because if you don't necessarily have a lot of finances, you may want to still go to college, but you may want to take your time with it and pay for it as you can afford it. Don't feel pressured into having to do it in 4 years, okay? I actually could have done it in 3.5. You know, I had enough credits and everything. I worked really hard. I took lots of classes, had very long days, and I worked. And I could have gotten out in 3.5, and I, you know, was going to go ahead and pursue a double major, and I stayed the extra semester and decided, yeah, I want to just go ahead and get out and go to work. I still think that there is a case to be made for college. I also think there's a case to be made for trade school. I also think there's a case to be made for things like apprenticeships and internships, because I think they all contribute to the education that's going to lead you to adulthood in general. What lessons do you learn in terms of having to juggle, in terms of time management, in terms of learning what works for you and what doesn't work for you, in terms of learning how to establish and create relationships and finding your bearings as an adult? Because, you know, a lot of people that go into college don't have any, let's say, skills to rely on in terms of some kids have never worked prior to going to college. Some kids have never necessarily had to make adult decisions prior to going to college. So I would not college at all. I just think it has to be a case-by-case basis. Yes, it can be expensive, and it definitely is more expensive now than it was when I went to college, but I still worked. But you have to have a balanced approach to college. And I have to also thank the person, my recruiter. I went to University of South Florida, and my recruiter is a gentleman by the name of Mr. George Robinson, God bless him. Hey, George, if you're listening. George came and recruited, you know, and I didn't go to school far. I went to Tampa, which is fun. It was a nice experience, and it was close to home, just far enough, just close enough. And, you know, because I originally wanted to go away to college. That's a whole different experience. And I went away as far as I needed to go. And but one of the things he told us, because his challenge for us coming to recruit me, he was recruiting black people. He was a minority recruiter. He was recruiting black people for a predominantly white state institution. And his challenge was to find a way to draw more African-American students in while helping them to understand the challenges and the ramifications that come with going to such a large university. And one of the things was that people at that university made up 4% of the population. So if you weren't comfortable being in a predominantly white situation, that was one thing that you needed to consider and navigate. The other thing was, like I said, being prepared for adulthood. He also mentioned to us that, and to me, it was a challenge. He said, just straight and plain, because that's the way he was, some of you all aren't going to graduate college. Some of you all aren't going to make it past the first semester. Some of you all are going to end up on academic probation because you're going to get there and it's going to be, fun, and you're not going to have the parents hovering, and you're going to party a little bit too hard, and you're going to forget why you're there. Some of you all going to get pregnant, so many different things that he said. And sure enough, I watched as different things started to happen to the people around me, and I almost got caught up myself. I can tell you, I had some of the most fun in my life with a lot of the people there. Hey, USF, I had a lot of fun. But I had a wake-up call, and I had someone to help me kind of navigate and get through. I had quite a few people, and I have to thank I try to not be partial. I love everybody I went to college with, but I have to give a big shout out to Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity. The gentlemen of AFIA were very good friends of mine, and they took me on kind of like a little sister, and I really appreciate a lot of the gentlemen of AFIA that really helped me kind of navigate my way through the fun stuff as well as the academic stuff, and also the social and community stuff, such as participating in the Black Student Union and the Black Student Leadership Forum. And so I have to give that out there. But I also worked. One of the good things that came from being a part of, that took my mom insisted on me learning how to type, me learning how to take shorthand. The shorthand I didn't stick with so much, but the typing definitely. Because when it came time to getting a job, I was able to get a job in various offices. I worked in the EEO office, and I worked in the office for the disabled while I was at USF. And also got a chance to work at the USF radio station while I was there because of some of the skills I gained from high school. But I have to thank also my high school guidance counselor, Paul Banfield, because thank you. And he helped me learn, basically. He kept me in line because he kept in touch with my mom. He whenever I looked like I was going off, he's like, I know your mom didn't tell you to do that. But anyway, I want you all to highly consider that maybe if you go to college, the lessons that you learn won't necessarily apply to a certain field that you're considering. You may go off course. A lot of times our influences in terms of what we select in terms of a field are based on what our family and friends say we should consider, and not necessarily what we're really interested in. So that comes into play later in life as well. So if you do go outside of your field of study, it's not a bad thing. It's okay. But just keep that in mind that that might happen. Tara Collingwood, I cannot talk today. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
All right. Thank you for joining us today. We're going to talk a little bit. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to bring her back because we're going to talk about that whole Beachbody thing and some other things when we come back. If you have questions for Tara, the number is 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back. Does it appear the long arm of the law is working against you instead of for you? Whom do you call when the boys in blue are pursuing you? When the wrong person behind bars may end up being you? With over 40 years combined legal expertise, Anderson & Welch bring to bear a smart, sound, sensible defense of those caught in what may be the unrelenting grip of the legal system. Turn to Anderson & Welch first to get ahead of trouble, not fall into it, by calling 561-832-3386. That's 561-832-3386. That's Anderson & Welch Law Firm online at andersonandwelch.com. Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, Dee. Thanks so much for joining us today. And I wanted to go ahead and take the break because I wanted to get Tara started. Tara Collingwood is a board-certified sports dietitian. We've had her on before. She's also a certified personal trainer with the American College of Sports and Medicine. She's a speaker, an author, and we're glad to have her here. What's been going on?
Oh, you know, life.
yep,
not much.
For sure.
I think everyone I'm talking to this week is like, I'm recovering from my sugar coma from Easter.
oh, yeah, definitely. And I've been kind of eyeing the after Easter candy sales. You know,
oh yeah,
I had to kind of pull myself back from the brink. I'm like, no one's gonna know whether or not I have a bunny after Easter.
You do not need a 50% off chocolate bunny.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate you pulling me back. So that is something, though, that we do need to address, because we have these holidays that for the celebration, the big push are the sweets. You know, we do that for Valentine's Day. We do it for Easter. We do it for, you know, Christmas time. We, you know, it's the whole, you know, and I've had to let go of my favorite motto, which was life is not complete without dessert. But still, you know, there is that lure. And so I think, though, we have to start with childhood in terms of kind of doing the conversion and getting, I guess, a little bit more of a balanced approach to how we celebrate. But for those of us that are already kind of entrenched in those bad habits, what do we do?
Well, I'm a believer in balance and not in saying, oh, I can't have ever. Now, you know, every day dessert, every meal dessert. No, you know, like you said, a meal is not complete without dessert. Well, yeah, you know, we can't have that three times a day or even twice a day or even once a day every day.
Right.
You know, having dessert. Now, could I have a couple pieces of chocolate every day? Sure. You know, that's different. It's, you know, maybe less than 100 calories of a couple pieces of chocolate, you know, and that can fit. But a big dessert, yeah, that's going to add up if we have that every day. So I think it's really about treating yourself, but thinking about it in balance. And, you know, I always say it's the how much and the how often. So if I want that big piece of cake, then, you know, how often am I going to have it? And, you know, how it does it have to be big? Or can I have a little tiny sliver of cake, but not say, oh, I'm going to sit in the corner and feel sorry for myself and not have any? You know, there's a big difference between that.
Okay. Now, does it? I've tried to kind of psych myself with this whole dessert thing. Does it make a difference what type of dessert you have? For example, and the reason I said I try to psych myself, for example, I try to say, okay, if I have apple pie or I have blueberry scone, if I have banana pudding, there's fruit in that. Isn't fruit supposed to be good for me?
Well, fruit is good for you, but not if you add mounds and mounds of sugar. So, you know, the difference, I would rather have someone have what they really want than try to come up with something that's like second best, and then you're still not going to be satisfied. You know, if you really want chocolate cake, then have that chocolate. But, you know, don't try to have the apple pie if you think it's healthier, because it can be just as many calories, if not more. So, you know, at the end of the day, it really is about the total calories. And even though it might have fruit in it, it might have very little fruit and mostly sugar. So I'd rather you just eat the banana, the blueberries, or the apples, and then have your dessert, you know, as whatever dessert it is that you're really, really craving.
Okay. All right. Because, I do every now and then. It's like, there's nothing, absolutely nothing, that is going to substitute for a nice, moist, three-layer chocolate cake or some tiramisu. It's just not going to cut it.
Exactly.
So just have it
and be done with it.
Have it and be done with it. And then the thing is, if you get it and you kind of go on and don't obsess over it, and you get, let's say, involved in other things, because I think a lot of times, too, a lot of it has to do with stressing during free time or something like that. So if you get caught up in something else that's more productive, sometimes you don't realize how long it's been since you've actually had that piece of chocolate cake. So if it's been, you know, 3 or 4 months, you know, and you all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, so it's been that long, that should be okay, right?
Yeah, I mean, again, it depends on what else you've had. If you've had apple pie every day of the 3 months in between, then you've had your dessert.
Okay.
But if it's been a while since you've had any dessert, or you've just had, you know, again, a couple pieces of, you know, a small candy or something, and that was what you, you know, used as your dessert, then, yeah, that you know, that piece of cake might fit in a little bit more easily. And it's all about balance. So, you know, if you know you're going to have the cake, maybe have a little less of something else that, you know, is going to have more of the same thing, like flour and sugar and, you know, those kinds of things. So, you know, if you're going to have cake with pizza, then leave the pizza crust behind so that you're, you know, leaving some carbohydrates behind, but yet you're making a little bit more room for some of that cake, you know, as an example.
Okay. All right. So I want to also get to the weather is nice. There's more of that temptation to go out to the beach, to hit the pool, you know, whatever it is. But because we're kind of just now thinking about it, our brains may be prepared, our hearts may want to, our body might be another thing. So we kind of have to do some retooling when it comes to that. And you know, a lot of it, my understanding is a lot of it, even though we go to the gym or something, a lot of it still has to do with diet, right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I've always said you can't outrun a bad diet. So, you know, as much as you're going to the gym, that's great. And believe me, I'm a big advocate of exercise and I do a lot of exercise. But if you completely ignore the diet, it definitely can catch up. So, you know, if you're that bear in hibernation who's coming out now for the spring and summer season and shedding some of the clothes, then you're feeling like, ooh, yeah, I need to get this body a little bit more toned. You know, the exercise, of course, is going to be great, muscle, building muscle so that you have the muscle there, but, of course, burning the fat off of the top of the muscle is going to be important. And then, you know, balancing that with the diet and just, you know, it is really a matter of, you know, calories that are coming in and calories that are being burned. So if you're increasing the calorie burn, that's great. But to, you know, double your efforts, you can also watch the nutrition side of things. And I always try to start with like thinking about the extras, because a lot of people have little extras that sneak into their day that they could cut out and they probably wouldn't even really miss them that much. So starting with like really looking at what are you eating throughout the day and do you really need all of those things? Like, do you need the mayonnaise on the sandwich? Do you need the piece of bread with the bread basket? Do you need 2 glasses of wine or can you have one? Do you need, you know, to have that much rice or could you cut that rice in half? So it's not saying, oh, I'm going to go on a diet and eat nothing but, you know, cucumbers and celery, but instead saying, if I can just take what I'm doing now and cut either the portion or maybe some of those condiments that are adding a lot of calories or the beverages, you know, those are the three things that I kind of look at is the portion and then all the other extras. And then of course, any liquid calories that are coming in that can add up quite a bit.
Okay. So, the diets though, however, and for some people, the diet's a dirty word. So let's say the nutrition plan or whatever game plan, whatever works for you all, that's not going to make you just run the other way. Let's call it what you want. But it's unfortunately, it's not a one size fit all. So everything that you see advertised and everything that you see on the store shelf doesn't necessarily work for everybody. For example, I wish I could remember what it was, but I was listening to something with my husband recently, and I said, you know, and they were talking about, you know, this diet or whatever, and I said, okay, so whoever came up with that diet, apparently that particular diet isn't geared toward African Americans because we have a high rate of high blood pressure and diabetes. Mm-hmm. And so how do you, I guess, make the choices? I mean, because I think some people want it to be, okay, I'm going to do paleo, so I'm going to, you know, it's all written out, and that's what I'm going to do. How do you get people to understand that it's kind of a hit and miss sometimes, and you have to kind of create your own diet?
You're absolutely right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Every body, you know, is different. Every single body out there, man, woman, you know, depending on your size, depending on your medical history. I mean, this is where, you know, seeing a registered dietitian, especially if you have significant medical history, that person is qualified to be able to talk to someone who has heart disease risk or heart disease, you know, that already has been existing, that diabetic, you know, all of that. So, you know, I highly recommend if you do have, you know, a slightly complicated medical history to definitely seek a professional, a registered dietitian. You can go to eatright.org, put in your zip code, you know, click on find a professional, put in your zip code, and then a whole bunch of people will come up who are qualified to be able to do that. So highly recommend that. And then, you know, in terms of, yeah, the flavor of the month, in terms of the diet, you know, you're right. It, you know, quote unquote works for some people and it may not work for other people. But at the end of the day, what has to happen is fewer calories coming in, you know, less food coming in. So if you're diabetic, if you have high blood pressure, like you said, you know, then if I'm eating less food, I'll be getting less carbs. I'll be getting less sugar. I'll be getting less salt. And of course, you're going to be paying attention to those food labels and, you know, the kinds of foods that are going to be in the diet for that particular health condition. So you can't just, you know, download a meal plan off the internet for the paleo and say, okay, is this or is this not right for me? It may or may not be okay for you, depending on, like you said, what your medical history is and your risk is. But at the end of the day, that's why I try to start with, you know, just a few more simple things of let me, instead of doing a huge overhaul and, you know, eating close to nothing, let me just start, and depending on how much weight you have to lose and how quickly you want it to come off, you know. So if you want it to come off quickly, then you have to do something a little bit more drastic. But if you're just mm-hmm. trying to make some improvements and start to see the ball, you know, go down, and then that's when I say, you know, just start cutting some of those portions by a third or a half, you know, cut out some of those extras, like I had said, and move more. You know, maybe you're still doing your 30 minutes or 45 minutes of exercise a day, but then you're sitting the rest of the day. And, you know, what we're hearing is sitting is the new smoking, and that even 30 minutes of exercise a day is not outweighing the 12 plus hours that we're sitting. So, you know, just getting up and moving for 5 or 10 minutes. I mean, while I'm talking to you, I'm pacing. I'm walking around, you know, the room that I'm in right now so that I'm not just sitting. Because, you know, a lot of my day I have to sit when I'm talking with people and, you know, working on the computer and all of that, I have to sit. But if I have the opportunity to, you know, pace around a little bit or move around a little bit, then, you know, I could do that.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm bad. I'm in the rocking chair with the computer in my lap. Okay, but but I'm getting up afterwards. I am. I you know, the thing about trying to get the right balance is really hard, because it's like, okay, where do I incorporate that extra time now? One of the things you just said is maybe pacing or whatever while you're on the phone. So that might be some sort of movement. And because I did notice also too, I last week I had a bad week. I had some digestive issues that kind of started when I was out of town, and it was one of those things. Fortunately, I've had a little gastritis before, which I think is what it was. Because the first time I've ever had gastritis, I thought I was having a heart attack.
I can feel like that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So just for those that are out there, they can feel a little bit similar, I guess.
Rather you go get the heart checked than not get it checked. You know, err on the side of caution. If you feel chest pain, yes, it could be gastritis, but it could be chest pain.
Yeah.
It could be your heart.
Yeah. But one of the things that I forgot about in dealing with some of my digestive issues was because I was feeling bad and because I had been away, I took a break. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to the gym. I just really don't feel like it. I forgot about the movement.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot about how it does. You do have to incorporate movement in order to make sure that your body is functioning properly. And it just went out of my head until, one day I was like, get up and walk around.
I was actually walking around
in a big box store, and it was like, okay, that's part of what I was missing was just some sort of kind of movement just to make sure that everything was working the way it should.
Yep. Moving definitely helps with digestive issues. But, and I differentiate between movement and exercise. You know, exercise is planned. Exercise is sweaty, maybe. Exercise, I mean, it should be, but depending on what kind of exercise, if you're doing yoga or lifting weights, you may not get as sweaty as, some cardio. And it's deliberate, where I'm specifically moving, getting my heart rate up and, potentially sweating and all that kind of stuff. Whereas movement, you can do in your work clothes and you can, go for a 5-minute walk. You can do some lunges or do some squats at your desk. You can do some jumping jacks, kick your heels off, but, do some jumping jacks. Or even if you don't want to jump, just put your leg out to the side and raise your arms over your head and, just do a non-jumping jumping jack. So there's lots of ways to, and just 2 or 3 minutes every hour, every hour and a half of just doing something so that, and what it does is it helps not only to get your blood flow, but the blood flow goes to the brain. So when you're like sitting at your computer and you're like half falling asleep, well, guess what? Your largest muscle in your body, do you know what the largest muscle in the body is? I'll quiz you.
Brain?
Your butt. And I'm not saying your butt, but just everybody's butt.
Okay,
everybody's butt.
All right.
So your gluteus maximus is your largest muscle in your body officially, okay? So what do we do all day? We sit on the largest muscle of our body. What do our muscles help us do? It helps to get blood flowing. So when you're sitting on the largest muscle of your body, you're preventing blood from flowing, and then it's not flowing to the brain, and it's not flowing to the heart. I mean, of course, a little bit is. But we know that when we get up and move, we can think better. We feel better. We have more energy, all of those things. So it's not just about, I need to burn a few more calories, but it is good to burn a few more calories, but it's really about just, and joints, when we sit, our joints get stiff and, you get up and go, So, when you're moving, it keeps those joints lubricated a little bit more. It keeps, again, that blood flowing. So, I can't, you can tell I'm passionate about this. I can't talk enough about, just the moving part besides just, that planned exercise.
Yeah, I know. I have a part-time gig sitting 5 hours with a 15-minute break. And at the end of it, it's just, oh, my God, where did my legs go? It's just awful, so got more of an incentive to find something else. So let's kind of go back because I tell you one of the issues that I'm having, like I said, I'm doing a gym, I'm doing salads, and yes, I do cheat. I'm sorry, but, I'm starting to look like a cartoon character where, it's straight until you get to the middle and then it's just out there for everybody to see. And I'm trying to figure out, what do I do about that? And then the reason I was also talking about the balance earlier, because it's like, not only are we having to try to find more time to exercise, we're also supposed to be trying to find more time to sleep, because sleeping is also supposed to be a contributor to weight loss.
It is.
So when we, there's that 24-hour pie, what are we supposed to be doing? Because also our jobs are, some of our jobs are demanding more time from us as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, let's go back to that sleep piece for a minute. So I can't talk enough, just like I'm passionate about, you know, moving throughout the day, I can't talk enough about how important sleep is. And I think we've, you know, really, there's been some really good research, even in recent years, that is, you know, really making this a reality for a lot of people. Sleep literally affects every single cell in your body, every single cell. So it's not just about, oh, I'm a little lethargic, or, oh, I can't really, you know, I'm groggy the next day. It's really, it's related to health. It's related to weight. It's related to disease risk. It's related to cognition. I mean, it's huge. And there, and not just disease risk, like, oh, you know, the big ones, the heart disease, the cancers, the, you know, diabetes. It's really like Alzheimer's. I mean, when we talk about our brain and brain health, sleep is one of the best things that you can do for your brain. They're finding, you know, research that shows that people who didn't sleep for, you know, got an average of 6 or less hours per night have, you know, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but definitely have increased risk of, you know, Alzheimer's, dementia, those kinds of things. So, you know, but you, as it's related to weight, you know, there's a lot of really good research studies around, you know, you think it's counterintuitive because you think, well, if I'm awake longer, then I'm like burning more calories, right? Because I'm not really burning any calories while I'm sleeping. Well, no, because you're also awake longer to potentially eat more.
That's,
you know, nothing good happens after 9 p.m.
Right. And that's the thing I've been telling everybody. I'm like, it's not necessarily, I mean, even it may be sleep contributes to weight loss, but I said if it's basically if you're sleeping, you're not eating, basically, because we have a tendency to eat up until it's time for us to be knocked out, you know,
exactly.
And then we get up
like I
and
said,
start
nothing,
to do things.
Nothing good happens after 9 p.m. So, you know, if you can think in terms of, you know, nutrition and all of that. But, you know, the other thing that happens is on a physiological level where we have hormones that are released, and there's hormones that trigger our hunger. There's hormones that signal that we're full. And those hormones actually, they found, get really altered when we are sleep deprived. So the hunger hormone is increased, the satisfaction hormone is decreased. So then what happens? You're hungry and you don't feel full. So you keep eating. And that's literally on a physiological level. So it's not even, you know, everything else we're talking about in terms of the mental and, you know, the fatigue. And we know that when we're fatigued, we eat because you're your signal to your body to say, hey, I'm tired. Well, what is energy? Literally the definition of a calorie is energy. So, you know, what do we do when we're tired? We eat because our body's like, hey, give me some energy. And so that's, you know, that's food. That sleep piece can be really, really big. When it comes to, you know, our total weight, but also definitely, you know, lots of aspects of our health.
Okay. I want to really get down to the midsection weight loss, because that is, for me personally, very extremely difficult. And I was a skinny child. I was skinny through college. I was 95 pounds when I went to college. I was skinny most of my early life, to the point where people's like, does she eat? And it's like, yep, she eats like a horse. You know, yes, things do change and everything as you get older. I'm concerned not just because of the way I look. I've learned the art of camouflage, so that helps. But I'm concerned because my understanding is that midsection weight contributes to heart disease and risk of heart attack and other things. And African Americans tend to have a lot of that midsection weight that I see. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, we have a dilemma going on in our culture in terms of feeding and nurturing and wanting everybody to not be hungry. But we also have that tendency to have that heart attack, to have that stroke, to have, you know, we have the diabetes issues going on, you know. How do we start? Where I know it takes baby steps sometimes. Where do we start?
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about what doesn't work. So you cannot spot reduce. So the only way to get weight off your midsection for real, like to without anyway, is liposuction. Like to say, okay, that is, you know, that's the place where I want it, you know, but obviously that's not going to be the solution. So, you know, we can't just spot reduce and say, okay, this is where I want it off. But the good news is that when we lose weight, it comes off from everywhere, and it will come off of the midsection. It's just that the most is accumulated there. So it feels like it's not coming off from the midsection, but it mm-hmm. is. It's just that the most is there. So by the time you get it down to where you actually want it to be, it's going to take a little while. So, you know, I say that to say, just have patience, you know, and don't just think, oh, I'm just going to do a bunch of sit-ups. All that's going to do, well, sit-ups are great, but all that's going to do is strengthen the muscle that is around the fat. And so when we talk about this midsection weight, there's kind of two different types of fat that we store in our body. One is the subcutaneous fat. So it's just right underneath the skin. Okay. That's the fat that you can kind of pinch when you, uh-huh. you know, are looking at your body. Okay. Then we have visceral fat, and the visceral fat is the fat that's like cushioning your organs. And that's around the midsection. So when you uh-huh. see, you know, especially these men with the big belly, that's like hard as a rock. You know, it's not, you can't pinch it. It's like hard. That's visceral fat, because the fat is actually under the muscle. Now, there's probably some fat on top of the muscle as well, but it's actually mm-hmm. under the muscle. That's why that belly feels so hard, because it's under the muscle pushing that muscle out, and it's essentially like strangling the organs. It's, you know, cushioning all those organs, but, you know, taking up all the space where the organs are supposed to have lots of space, and now you've got all this fat around there. So that's why it's so dangerous, is this visceral fat, you know, and so you might have both, where you have some visceral fat that's, you know, underneath, but then you have, you know, of course, some subcutaneous that's on the top. Again, the way to lose either one of those is to have a reduction in your calories. So, you know, burning the calories with the aerobic exercise, having more muscle that will burn more calories even while you're sleeping, and then, you know, really watching the diet from, you know, from that perspective. And like I said, it may feel like it's not coming off from that midsection, but it will. It will. It'll come from everywhere, and it will eventually, you know, come definitely from that area.
Okay. I know you have to go soon. I do want to ask you about some tips for our mommies. We want to keep them healthy
yeah.
and stuff. We have Mother's Day coming up.
Yes,
what
we
advice
do
you have for our mommies?
Well, you know, women are very specific in terms of, you know, what nutritional needs they have as well. And depending on what, you know, what, wherever you are in the lifespan, if you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, it kind of depends on what, you know, where you are in that lifespan with what you should be focusing on the most. But, you know, in general, you know, what we've been talking about today in terms of weight, I mean, that's, besides quitting smoking, maintaining a healthy weight is one of the best things that you can do for your health. You know, never smoke and maintain a healthy weight. Those two things are, you know, two of the best things that you can do in terms of overall health. So I would say, you know, protect yourself in terms of, you know, take it seriously that, ooh, I've gained, you know, did you gain some COVID pounds? And let's get those off before they really settle in for another 2 years. You know, are you above where you want to be? And let's work on, you know, some strategies from nutrition and exercise. So, you know, weight is going to be definitely an issue when it comes to women. And then, you know, of course we think about bone health when we think about women, because we're lighter. We don't have as much muscle as men. And so our bones don't have as much weight on them. And so it keeps them, we're more at risk. So, you know, you definitely want to be eating some dairy. If you're not eating dairy, then something that is calcium fortified. So if you don't do dairy, but you do almond milk or soy milk, make sure it's, you know, calcium fortified. Yogurt, cheese, and if you're not doing any of those, then taking a calcium supplement. And, you know, start with just a 500 milligram calcium supplement. Of course, it has to have vitamin D in it as well, so at least 1,000 IU of vitamin D. So that could be a good supplement to think about. And then the other thing, since I'm talking about supplements, would be omega-3s. you know, really protecting our brain. You know, as women, we this is for men too, but, you know, our brains, we talked about, you know, sleep and how that's related to dementia and Alzheimer's, but those omega-3s, the fish oil, can really help to protect our brains as well. So that's another good one that we can do to take care of ourselves.
Okay, that's good. Now, the other thing, too, is there anything for let's say, expectant moms or moms that are not necessarily expecting yet but are in the planning, something that they should really be considerate of?
Well, I actually wrote the book, Pregnancy, Cooking, and Nutrition for Dummies. So if you are, you know, thinking, and the first chapter is for the pre, you know, when you're thinking about getting pregnant and what you can do to prepare your body. So definitely doing a prenatal vitamin so that you've got your folic acid on board. Make sure that you have that. You know, again, maintaining a healthy weight. So starting at a healthy weight when you're trying to get pregnant is going to be good. Taking those omega-3s for the brain. Those are all going to be good strategies and staying active, you know, staying active and having a good cardiovascular system, because your blood volume doubles when you're pregnant and that takes a toll on your heart. So if you can, you know, have a strong heart and have a good cardiovascular system, then that's a really good thing that you can do heading into pregnancy. But, you know, of course, I'm a little biased, but I would highly recommend getting my book, Pregnancy, Cooking, and Nutrition for Dummies. And you know, just really paying attention to you know, getting those fruits and vegetables in there, high iron foods, because our blood volume doubles. You know, iron is going to be a really important nutrient when you're pregnant. And your doctor, of course, can test for that. So, you know, whether you get it tested before you get pregnant or in that first trimester, you know, making sure that you have good iron levels and taking a supplement of iron if you aren't, if your iron levels are too low.
Okay. Thank you, Tara. And your site is Diet Diva, right?
DietDiva.net. Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
And I posted the link on the Deez Power Hour Facebook page. Thank you so much for taking the time with us today, and I have so many other questions, so I've got to have you back whenever you get
back.
A chance.
Don't worry about it. I'll come back.
Thank you so much. Okay,
all right, so
you have a blessed
you.
Day. Good to talk you to
too.
You. Take care.
Okay,
and we're
going to
take a quick break. Bye. We're going to take a quick break. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back. All right, so we're going to keep going. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. By the way, tomorrow is Third Thursday, so that is Tech Thursday on G's Power Hour. We have Burton Kelso that's going to be on, who's going to talk to us a little bit about how we keep track of our the inventory of our valuables in our house. So we're going to talk to him tomorrow about that. And we're also going to talk a little bit about, I've asked him to talk a little bit about those lovely travel websites. So we're going to talk a little bit about that tomorrow as well. I wanted to also, by the way, the number if you want to join, you know, to talk about something is 516-387-1944. I wanted to talk about something that I kind of saw briefly on the news, and I really want to kind of get someone in to kind of talk a little bit more about it. I don't know if anybody saw it, but it was about an 8-year-old that was arrested for stealing a bag of chips, I believe. And, you know, somebody got video of it. And, okay, I know we have some small bad actors out there. This happened in Syracuse, by the way. But my question is this, and yes, I may be talking out of turn because I don't have children of my own. But my question is, how do we teach our young people that there are consequences other than just taking them into custody, especially our young black children, especially our young black boys, our young black men? How do we teach? I mean, there was a time that if you stole something from, let's say, the corner store, you got a chance to say, I'm sorry, if you were caught. You got a chance to make it up by maybe working off some of the time, you know, with doing, let's say, chores for the store owner or something like that. And, yeah, it was a simpler time, granted, or whatever. I think that our young people have to be shown that the only option for discipline and punishment is not at the hands of a police officer. Okay. I'm just having a hard time with that. You know, and I did hear that it's possible that, I mean, and like I said, I just heard it this morning. I'm still learning more and more about the story. I understand that it may not have been this young boy's first offense per se. And I also understand that the officer may have been familiar with the child. I'm going to post some of the stories about this on the G's Power Hour Facebook page. And I would love to really get someone on to talk about how we deal with our children. And I was kind of already upset because we've had a weekend or some days here in Central Florida and some other places where we've had some children getting killed, getting shot, or whatever the case may be. And I'm very afraid personally that our children are getting to the point where they won't know how to be children anymore. There's so many things that are working against them, and I don't know if we as adults are doing enough to protect them. And please understand, I'm not talking about coddling our children. I am not talking about being the helicopter parents per se, but what I'm talking about is finding a balanced approach to letting them enjoy their youth, because we all know once you get past a certain age, there's no going back. You know, we need to find a way to let the children be children, but at the same time, we have to kind of get them in the mindset of learning how to protect themselves, to have a certain amount of caution with dealing with our society. So I don't know. I'm not really sure how that balance comes into play. In this case, I would have, like I said, I would have liked to have seen maybe someone take the child back to the store and say, and the store owner, instead of just saying arrest him, saying, I'm going to let him work it off, you know. And the working off of a bag of chips may be more than the actual monetary value of the bag of chips. I understand that. But it's a matter of teaching life lessons. It's a matter of teaching, okay, you know, you go, you know, go. I want you to go sweep. I want you to sweep until there's no crumbs on the floor. There's no broken glass on the floor. I want you to and then I want you to go and mop and everything. But the thing about it is you might end up teaching a child skills in terms of house cleaning, you know, or keeping an area clean. Who knows if that child has ever picked up a mop or a broom, you know. I just think that we have to find a way of balancing it out where we learn how to do, I mean, are we showing as much love as we are showing as much punishment? That is my concern. I think you have to show ways of discipline that include love as well as discipline that may scar a child for a lifetime in terms of how that person is going to be treated behind bars, because I don't know how much good and how much rehabilitation actually comes from behind bars these days. So I think we have to do a better job in terms of figuring out alternatives, you know, and not just put the child in the corner for 10 minutes either. you know, like I said, there has to be a balanced approach. And I think a bunch of people have to come together. Spiritual leaders, I think we have to have child psychologists. I think we have to have law enforcement as well. And we have to have educators and parents. And I think they all have to come together to figure out the best way to keep our children while they still can be children, but also keep them safe and also get them to understand what discipline actually means. And it doesn't always mean going behind into the back of a police car or behind bars. That is just something that I'm really feeling strongly about. So, like I said, I will post this on the G's Power Hour Facebook page. And if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you have a particular subject that you would like to see covered, please hit me up on the G's Power Hour Facebook page and let me know, and we can try to get someone on to address that. But in the meantime, have a great afternoon and evening, and hopefully talk with you in the morning when we have Burton on. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.